There's nothing like sinking into luxury. Anabe sofas combine ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. Anabe has designed the only fully machine washable sofa from top to bottom. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabe has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Sofas start at just $699. And right now, get early access to Black Friday savings, up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Hi, and welcome to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. My name is Emily Thomas, and I am a mom on a mission to get a new perspective. Y'all, I am not proud of it, but I spent far too long waiting for my daily irritations to resolve before the good times can begin. And I'm thinking the struggles are just going to keep coming, so I might as well get a new plan. God promises if we persevere through our daily struggles, our character will be built, and we'll end up with a hope that doesn't disappoint. And I don't know about you, but my hardest days happen when I've lost sight of that hope. So if that's your story too, join me each week as I interview someone who has passed from just struggling to struggling well.
Hey friends, and welcome to the show. We are on episode 10, which means we're in double digits. I know, I'm excited too. My friend Brooke Nungesser is the guest today. I know her in real life. She is all the way over in Poland. Her and her husband have a remarkable ministry to the forgotten, such as ex-convicts and homeless men. My husband and I got to go visit her and her husband a long time ago in Poland and see firsthand what they have going on, and it's really life-changing for everybody that's involved. What I love about Brooke is that she's super honest about the fact that she wasn't that into helping the homeless at first, and I totally hear that. When my husband decided he wanted to go serve in China, I was not excited either, and I wasn't even excited for a period of being in China, but God has a way of changing our hearts even if we don't feel like we want to be changed, and so I think that happened to me, and I think it happened to her as well. While in Poland, her family has experienced a lot of heartache and a lot of drama, really, but a lot of joy as well. So I can't wait for you to hear her story. But before we get started, I want to read my favorite review from this week. Dana Kate said, "I love this podcast." Good, I'm glad. "It's equal parts commiserating, encouragement, and humor. Emily is real, and I love her inspiring story and all of her guests." Thank you, Dana, for your review. I'm so thankful that the show is encouraging. I really don't want it to feel like a negative thing where we're camping on struggles, because they're there, but let's look past them, because there's also a lot of hope and a lot we can learn from each other. So let's get started with my interview with Brooke. Hi, Brooke. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Fine. Thank you so much for having me, Emily.
You are so welcome. I've known you for about a decade now, do you think? I don't know.
Probably. Probably since I was so. 18 then, if it was a decade.
Oh, clearly. I know. Okay, so you live in Poland. You are my friend in real life. We actually know each other. Introduce us to you and your family, and we're going to get more into your story.
Okay. Well, my name is Brooke, and I'm married to a man named Richard, and our last name is Nungesser. We live in Poland, and we've lived in Poland since September 8th, 2001, and we started a foundation that helps rescue the forgotten. You can actually find out more about our foundation at rescuetheforgotten.com, and I also write a blog very sporadically, and it's a decent blog, and it's at twomakescrazy.com. I do have three children as well, and their names are Adeline. She is 9 years old, and she goes to public school in Poland, so she's fully immersed in the Polish educational system.
Okay.
And then I have two other children, and their names are Max and Josephine, and they are 3 and 1 respectively.
Oh my goodness.
So I guess I could rename it 4 Make Me Crazy.
Well, the two, what is, so Richard's the first two, and who's the second of the two?
I'm the other one.
Oh, you're the, oh, I see. Oh, and two.
Crazy. So we're the ones that are crazy.
I love it.
Because our life is just like that.
I love it. So, okay. So you mentioned, well, hold it. Do you not call it Bread of Life anymore?
Yes. The foundation's name is Bread of Life Ministries. But there's a lot of bread of life because it comes from John 6:35 in the Bible.
Okay.
So our motto is that we rescue the forgotten.
Okay.
And that domain happened to be free. So
I love that.
That is our domain as well. Yeah.
Okay. So tell us, how did Bread of Life or Rescue the Forgotten, how did all of that start? I love this story.
It's a great question. We were teaching English in two cities, and we had to travel by train. And this was 2001 in Poland, which really was only a decade out of basically communism. And so,
okay, so what was it like?
It was really gray. It was really dark. It was really cold. Cities weren't equipped to help their poor yet because they had just come out of decades of communism where no one was wealthy, but there really wasn't yet homelessness. So when they had homelessness, no one knew what to do with them because no one had money. When we arrived, I mean, we literally, no one had cars. The streets were still empty at that time, basically.
Okay.
So we would travel between cities and we would see all of these homeless people because they had no place to go, sleeping at the train stations. So my husband told me one night, we were teaching, he said, I think I'm going to go back to the train station and, you know, just share the love of God with people and give them some hot tea and some food. And I said, oh, it's too cold and it's too late for me. So have fun.
Nice.
So he went down there and he served about 80 to 100 homeless people. And he kept going back.
That first day?
That very first day.
He just carried all kinds of stuff with
no,
him?
No, not the very first day. No, I'm sorry. He served, he had 3 cups of tea with him the very first day.
Okay.
Yes, thanks for reminding me. And he said, okay, I'm going to go serve the homeless. Great, have fun. And he said, oh no, there's so many people. What am I going to do? Okay, Lord, this is going to be like the fish in the bread. Okay. And I'm just going to keep producing cups of tea. Of course, he ran out after his 3 cups of tea. Hope they don't beat me up for more food.
Oh, no. Okay.
Wait, the second time he went back, he was more prepared and he served all 80 to 100 and the third time and fourth time. And I finally joined him about the fourth time because he kept telling me how fantastic it was. Mm. So,
did you go like with a happy heart? Like I tell my kids, you need to do it with a happy heart. Or were you like, fine, I'll go. So you'll stop bothering me.
Well, I think by the fourth time, maybe I had a decently happy heart.
Okay.
But, you know, the first 3 times I probably didn't. That's why I didn't go.
Okay.
But he actually said to me, because the train station was a place of business. So he said to me, just wait outside with the tea and the food and I'll be right back. And I'm thinking, we've only been in this country a little over a month. It's 10 p.m. at night. It's dark. It's cold. I'm a little frightened. All of a sudden, I see my husband walking out and he's got about 100 homeless people following behind him, like the Pied Piper of the homeless.
Oh, my goodness.
So that did give me a happy heart. I thought, wow, he really must be doing some good work.
How old are you guys at this point?
We were 25 at that point. So obviously, I'm not just 28. I'm 39.
Right. Hey, let's be real here. Okay. All right. So then what happens?
Well, it turned out as we started to serve the homeless more tea and sandwiches, we started to discover their other needs. So clothing became something that we looked to help them find because you always feel just, you feel more complete in a hole when you're clean. Mm. And then we also discovered that, you know, it's okay to feed. I mean, of course, everything we're doing is with the love of God.
Right.
But then we're discovering, you know, they need work. They need places to live. So then we started looking for jobs for them. We started looking for places for them to live. And then my husband came to me one day and he said, you know, I really feel that God has asked me to open up a transition center for men.
Okay.
And I said, you realize that means we're probably never leaving Poland.
Well, what's the timeline on this from like the first cup of tea till like the home for men?
The first cup of tea was November 2001. And he came to me just like basically 2 months later. So around December, January.
Wow.
And told me that. And he said, I have a goal to have it running in 5 years.
Okay.
So in the fourth year, we had it funded. And in the fifth year, we had it opened.
Now, is that the one that I saw when I went to Poland?
Probably.
That house?
Yes.
When we came?
Yes. The blue house.
Yes, the blue house.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So what happens at the blue house?
It's called the New Life Center. And it's in a little tiny village called Druga Goślina. And it is absolutely phenomenal. So it has been open and operating since 2006. So this May, we are actually going to celebrate 10 years of it being open.
Wow.
It's fantastic. The men, it's just for men. We would one day really love to open a transition center for women as well, but we didn't want to have men and women at the same center because that causes a lot of different problems.
Certainly.
So the men come from either the streets themselves, and we have a soup kitchen that we eventually opened as well,
okay,
called Holy Start, because we don't want people just to have a good start with food, but we want them to have a God start.
Okay.
So from our soup kitchen, we meet a lot of men that are just homeless, but not necessarily struggling with addictions.
Okay.
But yet they need some extra help to get their lives back together. So a lot of the people that come through our soup kitchen, Holy Start, will apply and eventually, hopefully, go and live at the New Life Center.
Okay.
Where they can live. We have professional counselors. We have social workers. We have nurses. And then also, once they complete phase one of the program and phase two, one of the most important things is that they either learn a trade or a skill if they don't have an education or a job skill yet. And then they find work outside of the shelter, outside of the center, and begin to work full time.
How do they learn the trade?
If they don't have a trade, then we provide the education for them with professionals. So they actually become certified in different trades.
Okay.
So it depends what it is that they're interested in.
Okay. What do they have to do to be able to stay with you?
Well, first of all, they have to actually apply, because it's a center not for overnight shelter. It's a center for men that really want to be transformed in their lives. Kind of like from 2 Corinthians 5:17, that, you know, we're all new creations in Christ Jesus. We have to sense from these men that they really want to change.
Okay.
So it's a little bit strict to get in. But once they're in, they have to complete phase one, where the counselors and the therapists have decided that they're ready for phase two, which means that they are ready to work outside of the center. So to stay at the center, basically, they need to not smoke, which I know is really hard if people have nicotine addictions,
mm-hmm,
not drink, of course, behave properly. And then they also have to work hard in the home, and then eventually work hard outside of the home.
Okay.
And the men that come through become family, mm-hmm, and they're phenomenal.
So what's your timeline? How long are they typically there?
Actually, it's based upon the person.
Okay.
Based upon the person. So some people, they may come from prison, but yet have job skill training or job skills, or had a life before prison, but yet out of prison, fresh out of prison, they could be homeless.
Okay.
You know, so they just need maybe a transition between prison and finding a job in the workforce. The men from a soup kitchen, if they've been homeless for 20 or 30 years, they may be there for up to 18 months. Because they basically have to completely learn how to reintegrate themselves into society. And if they come from addiction rehab centers, a lot of people will come to us from addiction rehab centers as well once they've successfully completed the addiction rehab centers. Then it also depends on what their life was like before they got to the point of homelessness, or where they were no longer able to live because of their addictions.
Okay.
So roughly 18 months would be the longest, but...
Okay, how many can stay at a time in the house?
16 men.
Is it usually full?
It is always full, yes.
Okay. All right, so how do you handle, how do you handle your kids and these men? I'm just practically speaking. Are they there all the time? Is there... What? I'm just going to let you answer that.
Well, I don't handle much very well. That's why my blog's called In Two Makes Crazy.
Okay. Super.
Because we're completely crazy. We don't live at the home.
Okay.
So
do your kids ever go there? Like you said, they become part, like they become family. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We go there quite often. The men come to our homes. They come to our church. We spend holidays with them. We had a couple different groups from Arizona come out this last year. We went and spent entire days in the village. So, yes, our children are involved fully in everything that we do. So from the soup kitchen to the men at the transition home. And, you know, you would think that it might be a little frightening because, again, these men either come from the streets and they're on the streets for usually a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They come from prisons. And if they went to prison, it's usually for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Or they come from rehab centers, which means that they had problems with either alcohol or drugs. So it's not as if we're throwing them in the center of a group of men that have really, really clean pasts.
Mm-hmm.
But yet at the same time, you know, we've told our children that God has created every single person, and there's so much beauty within each of them.
Mm.
So they just look at these men as if they're their friends. My daughter will literally sit in the kitchen and make Nyla Sneakies, which are like crepes,
okay,
with the men, and they'll share recipes, or she'll make, aww, them banana bread, or they'll tell her recipes, you know.
I love that. So what are your kids, like, what feedback do you get from your kids? I know this is, like, all they've ever known, but what are their thoughts about it?
Well, my 3 and 1-year-old don't really even speak English, so.
Super, okay.
My 3-year-old runs around the center basically naked. It's a little embarrassing.
There you go.
But I think my 9-year-old absolutely loves it. I don't think that she fully understands the fact that these men have such dangerous or difficult pasts, because what she sees is that we love these men, and so she loves them.
Yeah, I think that's so, so amazing. I know that part of the story before you had these 3 kids, there was a period of time where you didn't think that kids were going to be able to happen at all. So that's part of my story too. And isn't it fun? Just kidding. It's not fun.
Yeah.
But tell us about that, because that's also a real miraculous story.
Infertility is really hard. Yeah. I remember when I was in university, one of the girls was asking me what I wanted in life. And I was like, a really big family with lots of children. Mm-hmm. She said, Brooke, what if that's not God's plan for your life?
Okay.
And it was the first time. I was probably about 20, 21. And I'm like, are you absolutely kidding me? Because this is my heart's desire. Mm-hmm. And she's like, but what if it's not God's plan for your life? And around 20, almost 22 years of age, I discovered I had a tumor at the base of my brain on my pituitary. Mm-hmm. And that causes infertility in about 25%. I want to say, don't quote me on it. People can Google it better. 25% of infertility in women is based upon a tumor similar to mine.
Okay.
Again, Google it. So no hate mail to Emily. I could be wrong. And one of the doctors flat out told me that I would never have children because it's highly unlikely to get pregnant. And another one said, well, if I take this medicine, then there's a possibility that one day I might be able to have children, but it's not necessarily guaranteed. And Rich and I were married for 5 years, and we never got pregnant. And it wasn't for lack of trying. And I remember one time just crying and crying, because it's really hard to have such a desire in your heart and not see anything come from it.
Yeah, for sure.
And God laid upon our heart that He would give us children, but they may not come from me.
Okay.
And Rich and I said at that time, we're like, okay, you know what? This is what we fully surrender then to. Lord, we fully surrender ourselves to the children, the perfect children that you have for us.
Okay.
And those were our words. The perfect children that he has for us. And so we started looking into the process of adoption. And the thing is, when you live outside of the United States, it's very, very difficult to go about home studies and adopting when you're an American. If I was European, it wouldn't have been as difficult.
Okay.
But I'm an American living in Europe, so it was a lot more difficult.
We had the same thing when we were Americans trying to have home studies while living in China.
Yes.
It is really very expensive and really hard to get done.
Very. And it turned out there were 2 people in all of Europe that could do a home study for us, and we'd have to fly them in and pay them and host them. And anyway, around that time, my mom and dad had come to Poland, and we got to take a road trip to Austria with them. And I just kept eating and eating and eating. And my mom's like, are you pregnant? And by this time, I'm nearly 30. Hmm. And I'm like, what a mean thing for her to ask.
Yeah. Mom.
She goes, I can't have a baby. And so we're like, of course we're not pregnant. And then about, you know, several weeks later, Rich and I are like, well, maybe we better check. So turned out we were actually pregnant. So the perfect first child that God gave to us, we actually got to have ourselves. And she came at 30 years of age, and her name was Adeline. So she's a complete little miracle.
I love that.
Yeah, thanks.
So then the other two came naturally as well. It just resolved itself?
Well, I wouldn't say resolved itself. Alan came in our 5th year of marriage, and then Max came in our 12th, and Josephine in our 14th. And we lost a baby in our 10th year of marriage and pregnancy.
Mm.
So it did resolve itself, obviously, but not definitely on what I would have put together as a time frame.
Yeah. What would you tell a woman? Because I was dealing with infertility overseas in China. I think I'm probably 100% wasn't like as into being overseas as you were, I think. I wasn't really my my jam, but I loved it. You know, no offense.
China. I don't even know if it's still my jam, Emily, honestly.
You seem like you're doing super fine with it. But what would you say to a woman struggling? Because I think after the fact, when we've got the kids, it can seem, I don't know. I look back and I think, are you kidding me, Emily? You really could have done that with a lot more grace. You know what I mean? What would you say to a woman struggling with infertility?
I would tell her that it's okay to cry. Because everyone always has an answer for how you should be so godly about it. And honestly, I think as a woman who wants children, I just sometimes needed to cry. So I would tell them it's okay to cry because it's hard to be infertile.
It is.
And to struggle with it. And then the next thing I would tell them is that the greatest thing that I've learned in my life, not only as a wife, but as a mother and as a woman who's also struggled in her marriage, is that, and it's, we almost lost our son, is that surrender, complete surrender to Christ as well, is basically going to give you the most peace that you'll have in your life. And one of my favorite authors is Jan Karen, who writes the Mitford series.
I love her. Yes.
You too. She wrote in one of her books, I can't recall which one, but it's like, pray the prayer that never fails. And I tell you, I read the whole book just so I could get to the prayer that never fails. It's like one of her last pages. And it was, it said, thy will be done. And I thought,
brilliant,
that is the most brilliant thing I've ever heard in my life, because it really is the prayer that never fails. I will be done. I always tell everyone that now. Hey, I know the prayer that never fails.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants that, right?
So I'd say someone struggling with infertility, it's okay to cry. And then with as much peace as you can have in your heart, which should be full, surrender everything to God and just pray the prayer that never fails. Thy will be done. And he will, I think, bless you with the perfect children that he has for, you know, your life, whether it's biologically or whether it's by the heart and in the womb of someone else.
Absolutely. So you mentioned that you almost lost your son.
Yes.
Is that something you are willing to talk about?
It is. As long as you know that I could cry.
Hey, let's do it. There's freedom here.
Well, we had a miscarriage in our 10th year of marriage, which was really hard, not just for me, but also for my husband. Sometimes I think we focus a lot on the moms and we forget about the dads.
That's true.
So we had a miscarriage and we had actually never expected a second child because Adeline was very difficult for us to actually get. And so when Adeline was about three, she started to pray for a baby brother or sister, and my husband joined her in these prayers. And I wasn't too fond of them praying for that because I thought it was building up a lot of hope that would bring a lot of disappointment. And so I would like to honestly say I did not join my husband and daughter in these prayers because I wasn't for building up false hope.
That makes sense. There's so much pain that comes from infertility that you kind of don't want to go down that road again.
Exactly. I was very, very content with this beautiful child God had given to us. But Adeline, every single day, prayed for a baby brother. And in our 10th year of marriage, I felt really different. And I'm like, this is odd. So I took like 25 pregnancy tests, probably easily. And they all came back that I was pregnant. So we accepted it.
After 25.
And unfortunately, at the end of the first trimester, when my husband was in the United States and I was all by myself, the doctor told me the baby's heart had stopped. Yeah, so my husband and daughter returned, and a couple weeks later, you know, we had our little baby that did not live. And so that was really devastating. Really devastating. And a lot of people don't know what to do when they have a miscarriage. And so I read every internet site there was, and I talked to women who had had miscarriages. And one of my favorite sites came out of New Zealand, and they said, oftentimes you can name your baby because it brings healing, even if you don't know if it was a boy or girl. And then something else, if you have your, you know, little tiny baby, you sometimes people like to keep or bury the baby. So my daughter and I made a beautiful little box, and at the New Life Center, we buried our little baby, and we named our baby Sam, which stands for either Samuel or Samantha, because Samuel was such a gift to Hannah in the Bible. So this was really hard for us and really, really devastating, because now at this point, I'm 35 years old. So it's very hard to get pregnant after 35 anyway. And all of a sudden, I feel weird again. So I told my husband, I said, I think I'm pregnant. But the thing was, I was bleeding and cramping and spotting. So my husband and I decided to not tell anyone.
Okay.
And the bleeding and cramping and the spotting continued, much like it did with my other pregnancy. And we decided to throw the Hail Mary pass, you know, like they always do in football games.
Yes.
Hoping for the touchdown at the end. And we finally, at the end of our first trimester, we wrote our family and we said, would you please pray with us because we're pregnant and we're not sure we're going to get to keep this baby or not. Mm. So we should have never thrown the Hail Mary pass. We should have done it from the beginning, honestly.
Mm.
But, you know, you have a lot of fear after you lose a baby, especially if your pregnancy is continuing down what looks like the same path.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our baby survived miraculously because he tried to basically abort himself around 17 weeks. We prayed that he would make it to 25 weeks so he would have a small shot at life. He made it to 25 weeks. At 29 weeks, I was in the hospital trying to stave in like contractions.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 34 weeks, I was put in the hospital permanently and he made it 8 hours into the 35th week. Mm. So when he was born, he was purple and just absolutely hilarious looking. She had to like old fashioned beat him to breathe, you know, like,
oh my goodness.
Then they rushed him to the NICU and he was in an incubator and on oxygen and he had a hole in his heart and his lungs had an infection in them already.
Okay.
So he started and ended a miracle. Well, we finally got him out of the NICU. We finally got him out of neonatal when he graduated NICU and we finally got him home. Well, when we finally got him home, he started to have some slight cough. And we talked to everyone. We talked to, you know, friends who were doctors. We talked to friends that were nurses. And they're like, oh, it's just the croup. It's just the croup. And finally, my mom, who was a nurse formerly, she's like, I really think you need to take him to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, within 24 hours of his cough starting, he actually stopped eating, had dry diapers, and got to the point where he was starting to turn blue.
Wow.
And so we brought him to the emergency room and the doctor, now remember I live in a foreign country, said, what do you want me to do? We said, I don't know. I mean,
fix it.
She's like, well, I can tell you, if you take him home, he will die.
Oh my gosh.
Well, what do you want me to do?
What?
I said, we don't know. Just what do you think we should do? She's like, well, you can put him in the hospital because if you take him home, he will die.
What?
Well, shouldn't you be the doctor like taking our child, whisking him off and putting him in the hospital? But she just literally had her arms crossed across her chest and shrugged her shoulders and sat at her desk. And so they put him in the hospital, and for 3 days, we kept telling the doctors and nurses, he's not breathing, he's not eating, he doesn't have wet diapers. And well, it got to the point where he was taking about one breath every, I don't know, 30, 40 seconds.
What?
And when the doctor came in to listen to him, so we've been in the hospital 3 days now. So he's down to about one breath, maybe two breaths a minute. And the doctor came, and she was trying to listen to him, and he wasn't breathing. So she'd shake him, which would startle him. Mm. So he took a really deep breath. And we said, see, our son is not breathing. And we've been trying to tell doctors this for 3 days. And she goes, oh, it's sleep apnea. It's common in newborns.
Oh, my goodness.
And she left us. And it was 9 p.m. at night. And she left us with our baby, who wasn't breathing. And we didn't see another doctor or a nurse the entire night. And I spent the night next to my son, counting to 10. And every 10th second, I would shake him so he would breathe.
Oh, my goodness.
He would take a huge gasp of air, and then he would stop breathing again. And I did this from 9 until 5. And finally at 5, I don't know, maybe I was too tired, or maybe I thought, yay, he made it through the night. But I finally fell asleep around 5 a.m. And all of a sudden, every single alarm went off. And no one's coming in. And I realized that my son has now stopped breathing completely. He's no longer with us. So I run in the hall and I said, my son, he's not breathing. So a couple nurses finally run in and they get him breathing again. And then they leave us.
My goodness. Is this typical for Polish hospitals?
Is it typical? I don't know.
Okay.
I try not to talk too poorly about him, but I don't have a lot of good to say about him.
Wow.
I think it's pretty bad.
So then what ended up happening?
So what ended up happening, I got on the phone with Richard and I said, you've got to storm the embassy and get us a helicopter because Max will die today. And so my husband was on the phone trying to get us a helicopter out of Poland.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm just watching my son die.
So how long ago was this?
This, he's 3 now. So this was 2012.
Okay. So Richard is storming the embassy.
He didn't get to storm. The embassy's 3 hours away, so he's calling everyone.
Oh, he stormed it via
calling everyone he possibly could. And I'm basically crying because my son is literally dying in front of me. Doctors haven't helped us for 3 days. Nurses haven't helped us. And we're not getting anywhere with getting a helicopter out of Poland. And all of a sudden, there's a shift change. And a new doctor comes on staff.
Okay.
And it's a doctor I hadn't seen in 3 days.
Okay.
And honest to goodness, I really thought she was an angel. Mm. Like, really, I thought she was an angel. She came and she took one look at my son and she said, "Your son's going to die." And I said, "I know.
Yes.
I've been telling people this for 3 days." She's like, "There's nothing I can do for him. He's going to die." I said, "So what do we do?" She goes, "I have to send you to a different hospital that has an ICU unit because the hospital we were at didn't have an ICU. It was 4 flights up without an elevator as well, by the way."
Oh my goodness. Okay.
She got on the phone, ordered us an ambulance, and immediately sent us to another hospital with an ICU unit.
Okay.
I got kicked out of the ICU immediately because, of course, my son's not breathing at this point, besides when I'm shaking him. And he got put into a full coma.
They put him in one on purpose?
Yes, a full coma, 100%. There was not anything of his own functioning.
Okay.
He had to have a blood transfusion. You know, by this point, his heart's failing because the hole in his heart's doubled in size because his heart had to make up for the lack of his lungs being able to work. So now he's on congestive heart failure medicine, blood transfusions, full oxygen, you know, what was a virus, RSV, turned into full-blown pneumonia. So now his little body's fighting full-blown pneumonia. And the doctors basically just said, "Well, we don't know if he will live or if he will die. It's a waiting game." And so we had to wait.
Wow.
He flatlined a couple times on us. So it was really true. We didn't know if he was going to live or die.
So how long was that? How long were you waiting?
It was a long time. He had to be bagged at one point on CPR because, again, it's not the best system with intercom. So when he had flatlined at one point, the nurses can only do so much. So they had to bag him and put him on CPR while one of the other nurses had to run looking for a doctor because they didn't have an intercom to be like, "Doctor, doctor, stat," you know, to the ICU. So
it's not like Grey's Anatomy.
It's definitely not.
So how long until you got to take him back home?
Oh, not for several weeks till after that. But my mom and I call it the good and the bad hospital. So the ICU hospital was the good one. The other one was the bad one. So when we brought like thank yous, we didn't even deliver chocolate to the bad hospital.
Oh my goodness.
That sounds
not
very Christian, but that's what happened.
Wow. I mean, I think as a mom, you just kind of know when something's not right. And so and I am a nurse, so I understand that medical professionals, you know, we kind of carry a lot of weight because we are the professionals, but there's just something about being a mom and you can just tell.
Yeah.
How did you personally walk through that really unknown waiting season? I mean, do you even remember any of it?
Yeah, I actually do. And it still comes back to exactly what I had to deal with when I was, you know, when I struggled with infertility. Was complete surrender because literally it's kind of going to sound odd, but as our son just got put into this full coma, my husband and I are driving now because we live an hour outside of town. You know, we had a child. So so now he's going to meet me at the hospital because I was the one staying the night at the hospital. And I remember God saying to me in the car, "Brooke, you need to give me Maxwell." Mm. And I said, "No, I'm not going to give you Maxwell," just so you know.
Yeah. Thank you for asking, but no.
So he said a second time, "This is literally our son just got put in this coma now. Brooke, you need to give me Maxwell." And I said, "No," for the second time, "I'm not going to give you Maxwell." So he said the third time, "Brooke, you need to give me Maxwell." And I said, "No, I gave you my last baby and you did not let us keep our last baby.
Wow.
So I'm not going to give you Maxwell." And he said, "Brooke, you don't know if I'm going to take Maxwell or if I'm going to give him back to you. But what you need to do is give me Maxwell." And at this point, because this is literally a conversation that I'm having with God in the car, I just started to sob because I realized that basically in the end, we need to surrender our all to him.
Yeah.
So it did not give me a guarantee that I would get my child back. Mm-hmm. And those were exactly the words that I heard. "You do not know if I will take him or if I will give him back to you, but you need to give him to me." In the car, my husband and I surrendered Maxwell fully over to God. And we basically just cried a lot and spent a lot of time at the hospital, and I think everyone else around us did all the praying because there was not much more that we could do.
Yeah.
So surrender has just been this reoccurring theme in my life for sure.
Man, and so today, how is he? You said he runs around all the time.
Yes, he runs around naked. He's just adorable.
So then you have a one-year-old now. What's his name again?
Her name is Joseph.
Her, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. She looks like a boy. No worries. She's still
okay, super. Okay. How was that to then, I mean, every single time, like none of your babies have come without some kind of trauma.
Oh, no. Josephine's hilarious. Well, first of all, we had been in Poland since 2001. So we actually, the full time we had lived in Poland. Mm-hmm. Well, after Maxwell, about several months after he finally lived, my husband and I were having a lot of problems in our marriage. So there's this new law in Poland that said, hey, if you want to keep your American Social Security, you have to reside outside of Poland for 6 months every fifth year.
Okay.
So our marriage was struggling, and there was this new law. So I told my husband, I said, I'm taking the kids to the States.
Well, let me just put a pin in that other question.
Sure.
Tell me, was the marriage struggling just because of all this baby stuff or just in general? How do you?
No. The marriage was struggling in general. Baby stuff adds to it because I think anytime you go through trauma, of course, it can always bring you closer.
Yeah.
But also, you know, trauma is very, very difficult. But, you know, we're two very imperfect people that came from two very different backgrounds. And so it played a lot into our marriage as well.
Okay.
So our marriage was having a really hard time. Really hard time. I'll be a little honest with everyone here. So that's why I'm called and two makes crazy again.
Okay, there you go.
So I told him basically, I guess I got to the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to leave. So you can come with me.
So you were thinking you weren't coming back?
No, I wasn't sure. I just knew that I had to get away from Poland, one.
Okay.
Because I didn't really appreciate how they took care of my son. Mm. And then I had to get kind of away from my husband. But yet if he came with me, it would be okay. But under the pretense that then we would receive counseling.
Okay.
So I guess he liked us enough to come with us. And of course, we entered counseling together as well. So we always say that was the best money ever spent was on marital counseling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks to, of course, the medicine for our son.
Well, yes. So you're back in the States.
We were supposed to return May. So our 6 months, we received a lot of help and we were actually doing quite well.
Okay.
So our 6 months were coming to an end and we were supposed to return. And I told him, I said, I really feel pregnant. And he's like, okay. And we took a couple tests and, they both came back negative.
Okay.
So I did a mud run.
Oh,
a 5K mud run, you know,
as you do. Yes.
Throwing myself over like 10 foot, you know, wooden walls and crawling in the mud and running through fire.
Oh my goodness.
But on that Monday, I told him again, I said, I really still think I'm pregnant. He's like, well, why don't you take another test? So we took about another 25 tests and they all came back. We always have a hard time. They all came back pregnant. Well, we were supposed to leave in 5 days for Poland.
Mm.
And I said, I'm not having another baby in Poland. So
that's very valid.
So anyway, I got to stay. And of course, he just had to travel a lot. I think he was gone for over 100 days. I want to say 120.
Okay.
While I was pregnant. So he says it was his easiest pregnancy for me yet.
I bet.
I said, it's because you were gone for the whole thing.
Okay. So you had her in the States.
I did. Yes. She was very large. Okay. And she was also very difficult. She came a lot like Max. I was on bed rest at 30 weeks. They thought because my water was ready to break and I was fully effaced.
Okay.
So they actually thought she'd come around 30 weeks, but she made it 40 weeks and 1 day and came out at 10 pounds, 10 ounces.
Whoa.
Yeah. Out of my belly though, because we discovered like 2 days earlier that she was large.
Wow. Okay. She's healthy and everything's fine.
She is. And my husband and I often talk about the fact that she's basically our gift because our marriage was at a breaking point before that where we weren't really sure if we were going to survive or not. And we did survive.
Wow.
And, you know, we always just think of Josephine as our little gift from God. Mm. And the fact that, you know, we really worked hard and our marriage made it. And we got this surprise large bundle that we wouldn't trade for the world.
So much of parenting well has to do with a marriage that's strong if you're married. And how do you these days with all of that wow, that's a lot of story behind you. How do you and Richard kind of build into each other today?
You know, it's actually a really good question. We have to be really intentional. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we learned, because we're really good at helping other people, obviously, because we have a foundation that helps a lot of people.
Yeah.
My husband's a pastor of an international church that serves a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're really good at helping everyone else. And we discovered that what we needed to do is be really intentional in our own marriage and spend every morning together where we read the Bible, we do a devotion, and we pray. And we do that over a really good cup of coffee, because I love coffee.
Yeah.
We don't always get it done right before our daughter goes to school, but we get it done either before, you know, the children wake up or right after we drop our daughter off at school. And because maybe it's one of my ways to survive, but I like to make a lot of really quick jokes where I'm really quite funny in real life. I'm not sure how I am on this podcast. But my husband used to really take great offense to when I would just say something funny.
Okay.
Because he always felt personally targeted. And he has learned to laugh a lot more.
Okay.
At himself. And so that's also helped me, because when I'm funny, sometimes it's a way for me to just kind of release, you know, I don't know, any sort of emotion. Mm-hmm. And then the fact that he can laugh with me about it and not take everything personally has really helped as well. So I think a lot of helping us maintain, as well as been just basically both of us just, I don't know, changing. We've both changed a lot. And we say the grace of God is basically the greatest gift we could ever receive in life. Someone told me once, oh, wow, your rewards will be great in heaven. I said, you know, I actually could live on a cement sidewalk in heaven. Just to be around the glory of God is enough, because his grace is truly sufficient.
Mm.
If it was not for his grace in our lives, I tell you, our family would really be missing out on being a family. Because, you know, my husband and I really weren't at a point where we were going to survive.
Yeah.
And we're still together by the grace of God, and we're happy.
I love it. How can a listener who wants to kind of know more about what y'all are up to, how can they learn about it? Go to the rescuetheforgotten.com?
Rescuetheforgotten.com. If they're a Facebooker like I am, I love Facebook, probably because I live very far away from family and friends in the States.
Mm-hmm.
We are on Bread of Life Ministries.
Okay.
So, and then my blog is andtwomakescrazy.com.
One last question. What right now, what are you loving these days?
Not the weather, because it has turned cold, windy, and gray.
Oh, man.
I think what I'm loving these days, I got stuck at home this summer. I usually go to the office, and our babysitter quit on us, and so I got stuck at home.
Okay.
Being stuck at home has been a blast.
Okay.
Because my daughter now is in fourth grade. And then my others are 1 and 3, and they're changing so quickly, and they're so funny. So I think that was one of the biggest gifts, is the fact that I now have to work from home.
All right.
I think that's what I'm enjoying most.
That's great.
And Polish food. Polish food is divine. So if anyone wants to come to Poland, just let me know, because I will take you to all the restaurants, because I love to eat.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Brooke, for talking with me today and telling us some really hard stuff.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh my goodness. What a lot of drama. I cannot believe that hospital in Poland is very concerning to me. Even realizing my kids had RSV several times as babies, and that didn't happen to them because of where we live. It makes me very thankful, but also uncomfortable. The ultimate takeaway for me from this interview is the idea of surrender, just letting God do what he's going to do, because he's a good father and he loves me. I tend to be stubborn, and I believe in my abilities so much that I won't surrender until I'm completely worn out and I have exhausted every other option. It's really dumb. I did it with my first marriage. I got married to a guy I didn't know because I didn't believe God was going to provide a husband. You can hear more about that on my friend Jackie's podcast, Mud Stories. I was so embarrassed about that entire situation that I refused to listen to my interview with her. So you'll have to listen to it and let me know if it's good. And then I did it again with infertility and building our family. And you can hear that story on my friend Heather's podcast, The God-Centered Mom. And now that I finally, after 6 years of infertility, have kids, I have a really hard time surrendering their future to God. Why don't we surrender? Number one, fear. Why are we afraid? Because we don't know God's character. So fear is really pervasive and scary, because we can just invent things to be afraid of. For my kids, I have two main fears. Number one, they're adopted, and lots of adopted kids, not all of them, but they come from places with biological parents who maybe aren't in the best situation, aren't involved in the best things, drugs, incarceration, things like that, just unhealthy patterns. And I don't want that for my kids. And sometimes when they do dumb things, kid things, you know, like you steal a quarter from someone, I think, great, you're a thief. Like, I obviously don't say these things to them, but in my heart, I just feel afraid, like, oh no, like I know where your future is. I decide ahead of time that my kids are destined for terrible things just because I'm afraid, which is so ridiculous. But then that brings me to my second fear. Oh my gosh, are they going to become as neurotic as I am? Which, hopefully not. I don't want them to go down the roads I've gone and the roads my husband's gone on. And so I feel just this fear of their future that I can't know ahead of time all the dumb things they're going to do so that I can help them. I'm afraid I'm not going to teach them what they need to know. And so fear leads me to despairing that my kids' future is going to be abysmal. Instead of surrendering them to God, I try to control things more. And the fact is, I could do a wonderful job of parenting and they still lose their brains and become terrible human beings. Or I could be the worst mom on record and they go on to cure cancer and end world hunger. There's really just no way to know. The only thing I can control is how well I do, and I cannot possibly be doing well if I'm not fully surrendered to God and what He is up to in my life and the lives of my tiny humans. So this week, my strategy to struggle well is to memorize Proverbs 19:21 so that I can recall it when I'm feeling afraid of what they're up to. Many are the plans in a man's heart, but it's the Lord's purpose that prevails. And moms, God has got a purpose for our kids' lives. He has got a purpose for our mothering. And if you don't have kids, He's got a purpose for your job and for your relationship. And if you don't have a relationship, there's a purpose in that. God is at work. He's a good father and He loves us. So my prayer for you this week is that you would fully surrender to God's purpose, trusting and relaxing into the fact that He goes before you, He comes behind you. We are well taken care of by a father who loves us. So let me know what you're going to do this week to struggle well. I would like to just be honest here again about a different thing. I don't like Twitter, but I really feel like this could be a good way for us to communicate with each other. So if you're super good at Twitter and you know what's happening with the world of all of the tweeting, find me please on Twitter. My handle is momstrugglewell because mom struggling well was too long. So please find me, follow me, I'll follow you back, and we can have conversations about what did you like, what did you take away from this, what did you learn from Brooke, how are you struggling well? I would really love to have some conversations with you guys, so find me, Mom Struggle Well on Twitter, Mom Struggling Well on Instagram, and also I have a Facebook page, Mom Struggling Well. So however you want to do that, please find me. I really want to talk to you guys about what you're doing, what do you want to hear more of, what are you learning, who do you want to hear on the show. I am doing this for you. So happy Thanksgiving. I hope you eat a lot of pumpkin pie, and I hope you have a really great week of struggling well.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.